FTN Fast Break Podcast, Thursday, December 19th, 2024, episode 32. What is going on, everybody? Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kawisenberg DFS, joined once again by my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, how are we feeling?
It's Thursday. It's my favorite day.
True.
It's true. I'm good. As we'll talk about, though, we continue to just absolutely crush the NBA Cup predictions. We're so good.
Yeah, we'll get into the Cup Final, recap that game first. We will talk All-Star format and voting, which opened this morning. We'll get into the trade machine. We'll talk about the games we're eyeing this weekend and close it out with stock up, stock down. So, Adam, let's run the fast break here. And kind of what you hinted at there, right? We were certainly not the only ones predicting a Thunder victory in the Cup Final, but it comes out the other way. Congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks winning their first ever NBA Cup title, 97 to 81. 81 points for the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. Like, if I knew the Thunder weren't going to be able to shoot a basketball into the net going into the selection, I probably would have chose differently. But shout out Milwaukee. This is some say this is their best championship in 5 years that they've won. Some say that.
Some are saying. I don't know what we'd have to check in on the Joe Mets contingent up there up north. But yeah, man, let's start with the Bucks. Like Giannis, right? He's at another level right now. If he is not number two on your MVP, your fake MVP ballot here in mid-December, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know how to.
I know what you're doing. You're putting SGA there, which I think is fine. We talked about this last week.
I don't know, man.
Imagine being Jason Tatum, though, because Jason Tatum's going to have a great season, and Boston probably ends up with the one seed or something, and he's not even going to be in discussion, probably, with the way these three are playing.
Yeah, but if we're not overreacting to what Giannis just did to this team.
I think Giannis, not even just the other day, but I think, like, during this, like, 13 of their last 16 stretch where they've won, he's probably done enough to slightly pass SGA for me. But again, like, unless Jokic goes down to like 25, 10 and 10, he's probably just going to win again.
Yeah. And they, you know, start losing, they drop into the, you know, ninth or 10th spot.
Yeah. I mean, what seed do they have to be for him to not even be in consideration anymore? Like, obviously, if they miss the playoffs.
I think if you're in the play-in, well, because the voting's going to happen before.
Right.
Right. Before we get to the play-in, the first round, what have you. I think you have to be in the play-in for anybody to consider somebody else at this point. But, like, when it comes to Giannis and SGA, again, like, I know I'm overreacting and the fake ballots change week over week for NBA fans these days. But Giannis, I don't know, Adam, like, this was, admittedly, I do not watch every single Milwaukee Bucks game, but we know how Giannis has been playing coming into the knockout rounds of the Cup. We know what he did in the quarterfinals, in the semis, but this was the most complete Giannis game that I have personally seen since they won the title. Was it 4 or 5 years ago now? 26 points, 19 boards, 10 assists, 3 blocks, 2 steals, 10 of 19 from the field, 6 of 11 from the free throw line. And that doesn't encapsulate, too, like, you get the 3 blocks in that stat line, but he was awesome on the defensive end, too. He did literally everything for this team, put the entire team on his back. And look, he did get a lot of help from Gary Trent Jr., from Derry Bird himself, A.J. Green. I thought those guys were awesome in the second half. A.J. Green hitting big, big shots, a couple off-balance threes. Gary Trent, not just the scoring, which has been down this year, but the on-ball defense from Trent Jr. in the second half to help stymie the Thunder. The Thunder shot 34% from the field and 16% from three, just 5 of 32. They out-rebounded the Thunder by 9. Just an all-around awesome game from the Bucks, considering what, again, you and I don't think without much thought, both chose the Thunder coming into this one. I think we talked about on Monday's episode that it would just take this Herculean effort from Giannis to really give them a chance. And not only did they have a chance, this game was not close throughout the fourth quarter.
No, I was like, flipping back and forth, and I kept seeing and hoping the Thunder were making a run, and then they just weren't. And I don't know, like, Giannis is obviously, I think, second best player in the league. Definitely helps when team just literally cannot hit a shot. Like, I just unbelievable. It's like almost like that Rockets game when they couldn't hit a shot against Golden State. Or was it the other way around?
Oh, it was the Rockets that missed 27.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's what it reminded me of. Yeah. So I wonder if Chet's watching that game, watching them shoot like 16% from three and saying, you know what? Might have to expedite this recovery.
Yeah.
But right. No, I mean, we talk about Milwaukee a lot. Like, they are as hot as any team in basketball right now. This win, I know Middleton wasn't playing at a great level and playing a ton, but even without him to do that, I don't know if there's a more confident team in the league right now outside of maybe, you know, Cleveland, Boston with how they're playing and the way that they're, you know, there's, it's still not 100% where you want it to be with the gel between Dame and Giannis, especially pick and roll stuff, but it's better. If they can just get like consistent contribution from one of these bench guys not named Bobby Portis, I'll feel a lot better about this team. But yeah, I mean, this is kind of what we were hoping to see when Dame signed here. It's like there's questions about the depth, but when you have Giannis and Dame, you should be able to be at least in 90% of the games and have a chance to win 90% of the games. And after a slow start, they are, I think it's 13 of the last 16 now they've won. It's insane.
Yeah, and like, I also, again, like, I'm kind of half joking here about it being reactionary. If this was a 7-game series and that was game one, I'm still taking the Thunder. But same. I think from a wider view, Adam, and this will never happen because less games is just not going to be in the league's vocabulary. Like, they want more games, more ad revenue, all of that stuff. But I think this is a good example of what could happen in terms of the interest in the NBA playoffs, the volatility, if we took it down even from 7-game series back to 5. But can you imagine if every single series in the NBA playoffs was a best of 3? Like, I don't think we should be just straight knockout, right? Like, that's just, you know, that's a little bit too March Madness even for my taste. But shortening those series, I think, would do good things for the viewership. So, like, hopefully, from my point of view.
You know who would love that rule?
Who?
Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, so, and like, from my point of view, I hope that, like, I like the NBA Cup. I hope that they continue to iterate, make it a little bit more valuable, not just for the players monetarily, but for the fans and the teams. Like, if we can get some sort of tangible, you know, we talked about potentially getting, you know, tying a draft pick for next year's draft that is tradable at some point in the first round, wherever the league would land on that. You know, I think that would be something that is, again, would get everybody else just as excited as some of these players were to participate and chase that bag. And then to finish off this discussion, Adam, you mentioned it a little bit. Is, I guess, two questions. First, was the stage too big for the Thunder, right? This is a team that is still, right, made it to the Western Conference, second round last year, bow out to the eventual conference champions in the Mavericks. Was the stage too big for them? Is this like just another good step where now maybe they're ready down the road for a bit of a brighter spotlight? And secondly, is Chet coming back hopefully in the next few weeks? Is that enough, or do they need to add size? Or maybe do we need to add another ball handler in the backcourt? Because outside of Shea, there's not a ton of creators on this team.
Yeah. First of all, like, I do think because they've been so good the last 2 years, we often forget how young this team really is still. I still think it was more of just an outlandish bad game, mm-hmm. more than just the lights being too bright. And yeah, like, when we talked about it, when Chet comes back, they can run those lineups with Chet and Hartenstein, and I think some of the rebounding issues definitely go away, and they still have enough spacing and creating. Mm-hmm. I do think the point about a secondary ball handler is valid because Crusoe can do it sometimes, but it's not his game. More of an off-ball guy. J-Dub can do it, but again, not a traditional, you know, point guard ball handler. So that's I'm trying to think of, maybe you failed your homework assignment. Should have been doing this on the trade right. machine. But I think that's a really good point that we don't think about often because SGA is one of the 5 best players in the world. We don't think about, and we think about this team overall as having really good depth, but not necessarily backup point guard. Like, imagine if they had a Tyus Jones, who I managed to bring up on this podcast every single week. But like, but in all seriousness, like that type of player would be chef's kiss. But I still think at the end of the day, this is first, second best team in basketball when it's all said and done. Probably get the one seed in the West. And it's also like just different atmosphere, you know, going to Vegas and everything like that. Like, again, it's not too different from just a road game, but I also just think it was one of those games where it's just like, chalk it up. We couldn't hit a shot. Wasn't our day. Move on. But it's definitely magnified a little bit more because of the you know, the landscape and everything.
Yeah, and that's where I think like the one game nature, you know, the winner go home nature of this title game, just it made me, again, overreacting on Tuesday night, thinking about, man, like this team really doesn't look ready, yada yada yada. But I think the broader conversation, and maybe something that you and I get into next week, is like, what kind of moves around the fringes can this team make outside of just getting Chet back?
I mean, if only they had draft picks to make trades.
Right, they can get almost whatever they want. Right, it's not just the draft picks too; it's the young assets, because you know, I think Cason Wallace, not somebody that they're actively shopping, but I don't think there are many pieces on this roster that Sam Presti would say, oh, I can't move this guy to go get what we need.
Just right? Go get Cam Thomas off the bench and let him drop 20.
Yeah, speaking of Cam Thomas, we'll talk about him here in a little bit. Before we get to the trade machine, Adam, anything else for you on the Cup Final? Again, congrats to the Bucks. Congrats to our old buddy Joe Metz.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. When we did the draft of the players we wanted to see get the extra money from the Cup, who did we have from Milwaukee that we would have liked to see? I'm trying to remember.
Did we have one? I know that Giannis at the podium was talking about their two-way guy, Liam Robbins. So he clearly should have made our list. But I don't think – did we have somebody from Milwaukee?
I know from the Thunder I had Jalen Williams, the center.
Yeah.
But I did not have anybody from Milwaukee. Yeah, but that's cool, though, from Giannis. Like, imagine watching that game and seeing Giannis just have one of his best games he's had in a long time. Probably more so to do with – getting him that extra money. That's pretty dope.
Yeah. And, you know, in terms of Giannis bringing guys along for the ride, like Liam Robbins, Canassus was out there. Giannis wouldn't go raise the cup until he could bring his brother out there. So it was good to see Canassus pop up.
It's also cool to see the vibes a lot different in Milwaukee now, because we started the podcast this season with like, Giannis might not even be in Milwaukee pretty soon. And now it's, you know, maybe that's still a possibility, but now it's looking a lot better. And Giannis, second best player on the planet. And right now, Milwaukee they're cruising.
Yep. NBA All-Star format is set. So we knew that there were going to be changes coming. And this was kind of already reported, but now that it's set in stone, let's talk about it. 24 NBA All-Stars, of course, that is standard, but they're going to be divided, or rather drafted, into three teams of eight and the fourth team in this All-Star, you know, for lack of a better term, tournament that we're going to have on Sunday night. Now that fourth team is going to be the champions of the Rising Stars game. So I do like this, even though I think overall the tone from you and I is we're doing too much here. I like this aspect, Adam. Kenny, Chuck, and Shaq will be the GMs of the three NBA All-Star teams here. And they will have a draft. So I'm looking forward to that. Candace Parker will be the GM of the Rising Stars champs. So we're going to have games to 40. The winners of the first two games advance to play each other in the championship game. So voting open this morning. We will talk about our ballots here. But what do you think overall about this new format for the All-Star game? Because it is different.
I don't know. Maybe I'm not fun. I just give me East, West. And as you mentioned before, you turned the mics on. Everybody wears their traditional jerseys, home away. And play some defense. Remember when they changed the rule down the stretch a couple years ago? I thought that was a pretty decent success.
I am also a fan of the Elam ending, and everything you said there, I second. Like, and maybe it's just what tugs at our heartstrings, right? Younger Adam and Zach watching the All-Star game with the players wearing their real team's jerseys and East versus West. Like, again, I don't, you don't
doesn't
have to
Kevin
go
Durant
out there.
Like absolutely hate this format too? Pretty sure he said
him,
he despises it.
I think him
it.
And Devin Booker both yesterday came out and gave some comments just saying similar things to what you said there.
It's just like, I don't know, like it hasn't even happened yet, but it doesn't even feel like the All-Star game at this point.
Yeah, it's not.
And when you look around the landscape of sports, like All-Star weekend is pretty clearly, at least it has been, the best All-Star type event in sports. Like I do like what the NHL does a lot too. Mm-hmm. Football is obviously a joke. So like, I don't know. And to be fair, maybe I'm overreacting because I think most of us would agree the best part of All-Star weekend is the Saturday events.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe I'm just more old school, but give me East West. I don't even love the captains either. Like just give me East West, no captains, right. Best players. Go back to the team jerseys. Like I miss watching like Iverson and J Kidd, Vince Carter and all these guys.
Yeah.
Raptors, Sixers, Nets jerseys. Yeah. Like that was fun.
Yeah. I'm thinking even, you know, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, those old Sonics jerseys would be out there.
T Mac.
Well, and I think this, it's not all on the format, like, or it's not all the format's fault over the last couple of years or this year for me, Adam. Like, it also is on the players, right? We know last year it was reported that Adam Silver, like, literally gave a pep talk to the guys to be like, all right, like, let's play a little bit here tonight.
I mean, Jimmy Butler, remember when he went to the All-Star game and just didn't check into the game? Like, he just didn't even want to play.
Yeah, and, like, so some of this going forward is on the players. And I don't think it's a hot take to suggest that it's only going to take one of those legends. Like, all right, KD, you're going to be out there this year, right? You're going to be voted an All-Star. So, like, take it upon yourself. Go out in the fourth quarter or what, like, right, we don't have a fourth quarter this year, but, like, go into these games while you're in there and play a little bit harder than you typically do in the All-Star game. The other players will fall in line behind these Hall of Fame superstars if they just give a little bit more of a shit. Like, mm-hmm. I think it could be that simple.
Yeah, I could see that. Especially because, like, I don't know, like trying to add some incentive obviously could work, but I also think part of it too is like, I don't know, maybe I could be just completely wrong, but I don't know if being an All-Star is as like much of a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a huge deal to these players as it used to be. Like,
right.
I don't know, maybe I'm completely wrong about that.
Yeah. I think
like for the veterans, obviously like, yeah, like, sure, they're probably expecting it, and it's not that huge of a deal, but I think we need to find a balance of, like, the players that make the All-Star team but don't care about being there that weekend, and the players that are sitting at home wishing they got in, because those players would probably give us a lot more of the, you know, competitiveness and excitement that we're looking for. I will say, though, like, give credit to the NBA. They're always trying to do something. Like, they've been changing so many things the past couple of years, so at least they're trying. You know, I prefer the old format.
Well, so let's talk about the ballots, right? So our day one ballot here, you and I were actually in lockstep for both conferences. So as a reminder, when you go vote on All-Stars now, you get two backcourt players, right? Two guards and three frontcourt players. So not completely positionless like some of the awards are now at this point, but you do have a little bit more flexibility there. So this is not who we think is going to be voted in because, spoiler, neither of us have LeBron on our West ballot, and LeBron is going to start the All-Star game because ultimately this is a popularity contest. But I do think it's interesting. Like, one thing, and maybe this is in some of the literature that the league put out yesterday when they confirmed this format. Like, I don't know how we're going to split these guys up because we've got 10 starters that we're voting in, but there's going to be 15 starters for the NBA All-Star teams because we're splitting up into three teams of eight. So I think that's going to be a little bit interesting. Maybe these, the TNT GMs, right, have to draft from the starters first, but there's no equal number there. So like, who is the 10th starter that will be drafted, like the last starter to be drafted onto one of these three teams. That's going to be interesting. That's kind of one of the many reasons that I'm excited to watch these guys, Kenny, Shaq, and Chuck, draft these 24 NBA All-Stars. So in the West, in our backcourt, I think this will be fairly universal, Adam, SGA, and Luka. But then in the front court, we've got the Joker, of course. But those other two spots, you and I had Anthony Davis, and you brought this up first. I hesitated. We both have Wemby as the fifth starter out West. I think that the backcourt is set. I don't think we will see a ton of serious ballots without SGA and Luka in that backcourt. But like, who are some of the other spots that could maybe grab, you know, on your ballot with a good week or two coming up? Like, who could unseat Wemby? Who could maybe unseat an Anthony Davis? Is there anybody?
Yeah, I mean, there's only two guys. It would be two of the greatest players we've ever seen, Kevin Durant and LeBron James. Now, of course, like we mentioned, LeBron is going to start the All-Star game. And as somebody that it's my favorite player to ever play basketball, I don't get mad about it like everybody else does, that he's going to start every year. Not like he's having a bad season either. He's averaging, what, 23, 9, and 8?
Not bad.
But the reason I went Wemby over him, the standings are close. Mm-hmm. San Antonio is playing better than we expected. Wemby's putting up ridiculous numbers, both sides of the floor. And we'll talk about this when we get into the reserves maybe next week. But, like, it always comes down to how many All-Stars do you think certain teams deserve? Do I think, like, obviously LeBron and Davis are both making the All-Star team. But in terms of starters, like, I don't know. If it was my ballot and LeBron wasn't arguably the greatest basketball player of all time, I would have Wemby over him. Yeah. But we both understand LeBron's making the All-Star team as a starter. It's going to happen. But other than that, like there's really nobody other than Durant or LeBron that could even make a case to start the All-Star game. I like what Triple J's done this season. You know I love J-Dub. Şengün's obviously been the best player on maybe the most surprised team in the NBA. They're not starting the All-Star game, though. Let's just be honest.
I think the one change that I would like to see to these ballots is, like, let's do two backcourt, two frontcourt, and then one flex. Because, like, if this was 2.5 weeks...
Then a guy like Anthony Edwards gets more consideration.
Sure. Or 2.5 weeks ago, we were a lot higher on the Warriors and what Steph Curry was doing. I think we should be able to. In certain years, there's going to be three guards that are absolutely deserving. So that's something that I would like to see in terms of the voting process for a change down the road. In the East, I think we had even less conversation on these five. We had Brunson and Donovan Mitchell in the backcourt, and in the frontcourt, we had Jason Tatum. We had Giannis, and we had Karl Anthony Towns, who just statistically, again, the Knicks, I think, are 16-10 or something like that. They're not jumping off the page with their record, but Kat statistically has been off the charts this year. It's like 25 points and 13 boards a game. So any notes on our Eastern Conference ballot here?
No, I think some people ask about LaMelo averaging 30 a game, but do you care about winning? Do you also care about he's missed some time, obviously? And, like, there's guards like Donovan Mitchell, don't get me wrong. Like, his statistics aren't, like, the best we've ever seen from Donovan Mitchell. They're down from last season, but it's also because the Cavs are getting contributions from everywhere else, and Garland's playing better, and Mobley's playing better. But if you're telling me a team with the best record in all of basketball isn't getting an all-star starter, especially one to Donovan Mitchell's level, I think you're crazy. The thing with Brunson and Towns, if we were just only allowed to put one player from a team as a starter, it would be Cat over Brunson. That's how good Cat's been, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you.
With his facilitating too. So to me, like, the obvious ones were Tatum, Giannis, and it stinks too because I think we would have had a discussion between Cat and Franz if Franz didn't get hurt.
Yeah. But or Paolo, right?
And then some people ask, Where's Jaylen Brown? Cat's just been better this year. It's kind of that simple.
Yeah, I don't think that's particularly close.
This is the easiest one though, because there's nobody you can make a case for in the front court to start other than those guys. Especially with Franz going down. And Beat obviously isn't really a consideration to start or anything like that. So the backcourt's gonna be interesting too. I can't wait till next week when we talk about the reserves. Just a teaser though. How many Cavs is too many just for the All-Star game?
I don't know, man. I feel like you're gonna go full like 2014 Hawks and
I'm
you're
not.
Gonna have four Cavs.
No. Teaser, Jared Allen should not be an All-Star, but Evan Mobley
okay.
should be.
Yeah,
Mobley
okay.
should be.
Well, I'm excited for that because I think we'll have some actual debate on some of those potential reserve spots. But right now, Adam, let's jump into the trade machine. So if you're watching on the YouTube, we're going to take this little overlay off. We are going to share the screen here. And I have concocted a couple trades based on some of the rumors we've been hearing. So I only did one Jimmy Butler trade, right? We talked about how we think, or at least I think the Mavericks probably cannot get this done. I don't think the Suns will either. I think the Suns would like to, as you can see on the screen here on the YouTube, trade Jimmy Butler or receive Jimmy Butler and Alec Burks for Bradley Beal. But the one thing we have to keep in mind with any Suns trade that like it's going to be Beal going out in a Jimmy Butler trade, and he has a no trade clause. So like, does Bradley Beal want to go to South Beach for the next 3 years? I could see that, but it's not like living in Phoenix is too terrible either for any of these NBA players. Again, I think this is fairly far-fetched because Beal is the one that has to sign off on something like this.
I just don't know why you would do this if you're Miami. Mm. Like, I think with everything Tyler Hero and Bam have done,
uh-huh.
I think Beal would probably demand the ball more than Butler has. I mentioned it last week. Butler's usage rate's the lowest in like 10 plus years.
Yeah.
But it's obviously like you can't trade him to Phoenix without Beal coming back. So I just don't know where that's why I was always hesitant on Phoenix as a landing spot for Butler in the first place. I think if you're trading Butler at this point for Miami, you are going into it saying, you know what? Hero's been our best player and Bam's been our best player. We're building through them with the dribble handoff and we need kind of like slashing players and shooting around it.
Yeah.
Or maybe like, because Tyler Hero was essentially playing point guard for them, like maybe you try to get a point guard back and just let Hero play a little bit more off the ball at times too. But yeah, I would actually think Miami would be worse with this trade.
Well, and of course, like in a lot of these trades, there's going to be some sort of draft compensation yep. changing hands as well. But like, it's not just the on-court stuff. It's that if you're getting off the Jimmy Butler contract, you're probably trying to clear some space, right?
Right.
Get out from under that $50+ million player option. You get Bradley Beal. It is a longer $50 million deal. Again, no trade clause, I believe, comes back into effect when he gets to his new team. And you're also not fixing the problem that Pat Riley perceived at the end of last season where like he was like, we need Jimmy to actually play in the regular season. Adam, Bradley Beal has not exceeded 60 games right. in a season since 2018-19. And that was one time he got to 60 games. Like the last 4 years, 40, 50, 53. And then, of course, he's missed time this season in multiple spots. I don't think this is super likely. So let's keep it moving. Let's talk Zach LaVine trades, because this came out, I believe it was Wednesday morning, when we got the news that the Nuggets have been sniffing around Zach LaVine. So I've got two LaVine to Denver trades here, and I think this one is a little bit more friendly to the Nuggets, where Zach LaVine would arrive in Denver in exchange for Michael Porter Jr., Dario Saric, and the injured Vlatko Chanchar. Dario Saric also out at the moment, but I believe Chanchar is the longer-term injury at this point. Saric does not really help the Bulls going forward. Chanchar has been extremely injured over the last 2.5 seasons. But I do think that exchanging LaVine for Michael Porter Jr. is maybe not a winning proposition for the Bulls because I think they're a few years off, but I think that is a move that I would make just straight up. Again, you got to get those salaries matching here. The Nuggets don't have a ton of draft capital to send along, but I imagine there would be some added on to this deal. My second one, just so we can discuss it as a whole, you take out Saric and Chanchar, I think the Bulls would be more likely to do a deal like this where you're getting not only MPJ back, but Zeke Nnaji as well. Very cheap deal for 3.5 years left for Nnaji there. In a front court that, again, you don't think is long for a guy like Vucevic. So if he's on the way out too, you add a younger big in Najee, and you really throw that tank into high gear there in Chicago. What are your thoughts on these deals that I cooked up for LaVine going to Denver?
Yeah, I think like Michael Porter hasn't had the season we were hoping, but he's been like quietly underrated in other aspects, not just shooting. But yeah, I mean, with like Jamal Murray, speaking of seasons we didn't expect, like having LaVine as somebody that can play off ball and shoot, can definitely slash when Jokic is posting up and getting double teamed. I think you lose some defensively, but at this point, like with the way Denver is, you might just have to outscore people anyway. I think this could be the most interesting landing spot, and I hadn't even thought about it until the report came out on Wednesday. This is something I think I'd want to see, though, LaVine with Jokic, just because, like, yeah, you already won the championship, but you have the best player on the planet. You have to maximize this every single year, and right now it's just not looking like you are a championship contender. And, like, he's not as good, but, like, I think the emergence of Christian Brown maybe makes Michael Porter Jr. a little bit more expendable than he might have been, you know, 5 months ago. So, and LaVine's obviously been almost the center of trade discussions for like 3 years now. This feels like the year it finally happens because, I mean, it should have happened last season. They should have traded everybody. Mm-hmm. But this is probably the spot I'd like to see most. I'm trying to think like, you know, Golden State maybe, but like this seems like the spot.
Let me open this up to another team here. Let me bring in the Brooklyn Nets and run this by you here, Adam. The Nets would be receiving Michael Porter Jr. and a 2031 first-round pick. Again, they could throw in some other swaps. Like the Nuggets do not have a lot of draft capital to dole out here in a potential trade. But in this instance, they would be sending out MPJ and that 2030-round first in exchange for Cam Johnson, Cam Thomas, and Trendon Watford. Like, is this too expensive, do you think, for the Nets? Would they not send? Because, again, we got to match those salaries. And I think that Cam Johnson obviously is a piece that, with that contract, I think is more attractive to me right now than a guy like MPJ on his current contract. And also throwing in a guy like Cam Thomas to this trade, I think this may be a little bit far-fetched, but, like, to me, this is like, this would be the best thing that could possibly happen to the Denver Nuggets, because you slap Cam Johnson in for MPJ, and then to have a guy like Cam Thomas available off the bench, like, this, to me, a trade like this would vault the Nuggets back into contender territory. And that's why I think it's not super likely, because I think I'm a little bit too friendly to Denver in this instance, but this one kind of raised my eyebrow.
Yeah, I mean, there's a decent chance that both Cam Johnson and Cam Thomas are traded before the deadline. I would be shocked if it was part of the same deal. Do you worry about Cam Thomas, like his fit with this team?
Sure. I worry about his fit anywhere.
Remember when they had Bones Highland and he would just take the worst shots you've ever seen with the second unit?
But I also think that this could, at least for the rest of the regular season, would take some pressure off of Jokic, because then you have a guy who can go out there, create his own shot, and actually lift the second unit when he is on. Now, can he torpedo your chances in the middle of a game too and shoot you right out of one? Absolutely. But they just don't even have an option like this on their second unit. Like, Julian Strother is just not ready to me. And so, like, being able to add a guy like Cam Thomas into this mix would just kind of be like the firecracker that I think this second unit needs, because Russell Westbrook just doesn't have the ability to lit. Like, I think he could elevate the game of somebody like Cam Thomas, but he just doesn't have really that game changing ability even off the bench to me anymore. But, and that's not to knock on what Russ has done with the Nuggets this year. I actually think he's been really good for them.
Same.
All things considered now after a rocky start, but man, I think, you know, again, I don't think this is likely, but I think Denver fans would be over the moon if something like this happened.
Yeah, Cam Johnson, unless we get LaVine, Vucevic trade, Jimmy Butler trade, he's going to be probably the player that teams, contending teams, want the most in trades.
Yeah. So the next one I'm looking at here, Remember a guy named Bruce Brown? He's up there in Toronto, hasn't made his debut yet this year. And another guy who hasn't made his debut is Kawhi Leonard. So Kawhi's supposed to be back in the next week or so, went through full practice in the middle of this week. How about getting Bruce Brown out to the West Coast? This works in the trade machine here, Adam. Bruce Brown to the Clippers in exchange for PJ Tucker's contract, Bones Highland, and the young Kobe Brown, who is currently injured. The reason I like this is, I think, and again, I would think the Clippers, another team that do not have a ton of draft capital to be tossing around in these trades, maybe a couple second rounders in here as well. And it helps the Raptors with their two missions of developing young talent this year in Bones and Kobe Brown. They don't have to worry about PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker technically coming back home there, former Raptor, one-time Raptor, and getting a couple assets. It helps them developing young players, and it helps them tank. Those are the two goals of the Raptors season here in 2024-2025. So what are your thoughts on this deal? Bruce Brown, again, coming back from the knee injury very slowly, and I think that is with the purpose of shipping him and his expiring contract out somewhere to a contender this year. And the Clippers don't have many moves they can make. This is one that really intrigues me.
I like this one. I've always liked Bruce Brown. Was a key part of that Denver team. And he's somebody that when he's out there, like, he can do a little bit of everything. And obviously you hope it doesn't coincide with Kawhi being out. But, like, if Kawhi does miss time again at some point, obviously you don't feel like you're solved with Bruce Brown, but I think that's a lot better. Plus, you're still getting good contributions from Norman Powell. James Harden and Zubac has actually been one of the best, like, duos in the league this season. Mm-hmm. And I think Bruce Brown would kind of be, like, almost a perfect fit. So, yeah, like, I mentioned this when I saw this trade. When he sent it to me, I was like, I forgot all about Bruce Brown. but I like it.
Last one we'll talk about here, and this is just based off of not even a rumor. There's a report that said if CJ McCollum is to be traded, one of the more likely destinations would be Milwaukee. And so one thing you got to think about here with any Milwaukee trade is this is a second apron team, right? So we know these new CBA rules came into effect last offseason. And so what this means is that the Bucks cannot aggregate players in a trade. So there's no 2-for-1 trades, no 3-for-2s. So this gets very complicated, and with having to match the salaries and not being able to aggregate players, this deal to get CJ McCollum to Milwaukee, I don't know who else they could be sending out to do something like this other than Chris Middleton. And so this would be the Bucks getting CJ McCollum, Javonte Green, and Antonio Reeves from the Pelicans in exchange for Chris Middleton, rookie AJ Johnson, and the expiring contract of Marjon Beauchamp. And then you would think some of the, just, again, another team with very few draft assets to toss around in a trade, a couple draft pieces coming back to the Pelicans. So I don't think I love this one bit. Like, I don't think CJ helps you on the defensive end. Obviously, he would help you offensively.
Then you have the questions again. Can Dame and CJ win together? It's just,
yeah.
Like,
and maybe with weird. Giannis, they can. And I do think right now that, like, CJ would be a more reliable piece health-wise than Chris Middleton. But, like, are we really helping our chances a ton with a deal like this? I'm not sure. What are your thoughts?
Remember when the Thunder and Bucks just played the other day? Yeah, if they played again and they had a defensive backcourt of McCollum and Dame Lillard, SGA might drop 50.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to be fair, though, that's been their issue with what they have now anyway. Like, they just cannot defend backcourt. So, but man, like, we know what that, like, if you at any point are going to have a defensive backcourt with Dame and CJ, you better have rim protection behind it, and they do. So, like, theoretically, it works a lot better than it did in Portland, but still a little scary. And, like, I just, like, obviously, most of these trades are far-fetched. They're fun. Some of them I think we could see, but this one was just, like, I almost was, like, talking out loud. I was like, Dame and CJ together, that'd be interesting. I was like, wait, they played together for years. I was like, what am I talking about?
Yeah, we have seen that before. So a little bit of trade machine fun there on your Thursday. And of course, if you know Adam and myself, we will be back in that trade machine sooner rather than later. A couple games we're eyeing this weekend. Of course, no games on Wednesday. So, boom, 13-game slate here on Thursday night, Adam. I've got a four-pack of games that I want to have my eye on tonight. Golden State at Memphis. Again, a lot of these are just winning teams playing each other. This one, not so much. Hawks, a little above 500. Spurs, I think, right at 500. But, Adam, this is one of the most important games of the Spurs season because you got to deal two losses to the Hawks this year and the next 2 years after this, owning their draft unprotected first-round pick. So Hawks at Spurs. Then we've got Knicks at Wolves. So not only a good matchup on paper, but revenge spot. We know Karl-Anthony Towns, right, missed that first matchup between these two earlier this year. So Towns going back to Minnesota. We've got narratives on both sides of the ball there. And then Lakers at Kings, one of the late night hammers here on Thursday night. Friday, I'm looking at your team. Bucks at Cavs, just a three-game slate there on Friday. Saturday, Warriors at Wolves. I'll take a look at that on Saturday in between watching college football playoff, NFL doubleheader there on Saturday. Then not a ton of great games on Sunday. But I'll turn Jokic. I'll put Jokic on one of my screens, especially with my Steelers playing on Saturday, Nuggets at Pelicans. We'll see what Denver can do against the dregs of the Western Conference. Any other games you have your eye on?
Nope. I'm excited for that Cavs-Milwaukee game because they played twice already this season. One game was without Giannis. Cavs were obviously rolling, but this is a much different Milwaukee team, so I'm excited for that.
We'll close out this episode, as we always do, with a little stock up, stock down. We will start with our stock downs, and I'm going to go first here this week, Adam. Stock down to the Charlotte Hornets because they had to apologize for taking back a PlayStation 5 that they gifted to a 13-year-old fan in an on-court skit. I don't get what was going on here. Of course, in the apology, they said there was a miscommunication and bad decision-making. Apparently, they did give the kid a PS5 and then some other stuff on top of it after the fact. But, like, how this happened, how anybody thought that giving the kid, like, faking giving a child a PlayStation on the court in front of, you know, 15,000 people or whoever was there. I don't know if there's much more than 15,000
15 people.
That have been at a Hornets game lately. But, like, what are you doing? So, like, congrats to the kid for getting the PlayStation and some change eventually, but just like completely avoidable bad PR by Charlotte. Stock down.
Hadn't even seen that. Just if it was like, you know, 20-25 year old, I get where there wouldn't be, but like it's a kid, like he's obviously gonna feel some type of way about it. You just put him to this level of excitement and then comes right back down. Like, the kid's going to be livid, as he should be.
Yeah. What's your stock down here on episode 32?
Yeah, mine's boring, but it's going back to the Thunder. Like, just – and it's also the NBA and the fans, because was excited for that game. Thunder completely no-show, can't hit a shot. The game becomes absolutely boring. Just, you know, the NBA Cup Finals being – and I know there's been a lot of talk about the NBA product being bad and stuff like that. I just think sometimes these things happen, but it was definitely a letdown.
All right, stock up. We'll close it on a high note. And I know we actually have the exact same stock up. Our stock.
I was going to add it to the show sheet, and it was already there.
Yeah. Well, so I'll let you start. Let's explain why our stock up on episode 32 is Suns owner Matt Ishbia. Take it away.
Do I have to say anything more than $2 hot dogs?
Yeah, there you go.
Like, dude, I've been waiting for any team in any sport to do this. Like, it makes just way too much sense. You know how many times people eat before they go to the game? Just so they don't have to spend the money there.
I do every time, dude.
Exactly. Bro, and like, in Philadelphia, the Phillies have occasional dollar dog nights. And they are like, bookmark it, put it on your calendar, go.
Yeah.
You're telling me $2 hot dogs? What was it? $2 popcorn, $2 soda? Like, that is a massive, massive. That is a massive win.
Yeah,
massive. That team and the Suns are going to be a good team. That team could be 1-81, and I'm going just for the vibes to watch other good players play on that team and to have five $2 hot dogs.
Yep, I mean, it's following the Arthur Blank model there, right, with the Atlanta Falcons, with Atlanta United there in the MLS. So Ishbia, tweeted about the value menu, and then he followed it up saying, a family of four used to spend $98 for hot dogs, water, and popcorn. Now they can enjoy that same meal for $24. Our fans and community are the foundation of what we do, and we will continue to invest in making this the best organization in all of basketball, on and off the court. And like, also, like, this is on the heels of coming into this season where Ishbia put the Suns back on regular TV and sent out free TV antennas to Suns fans. So like, that combined with this price reduction on the stadium concessions, like double thumbs up, all the stock up you can have. Like, this will be my stock up for like weeks to come, just in the back of my head. I love to see stuff like this.
Yeah, I'm jealous, but also very hype. I just don't understand why teams don't do this. Like,
yeah,
do you know how much money you'll make? I know obviously like the price difference is large because stuff is so overpriced at these games to start with, but people are actually going to want to eat at your games now. How about that?
Dude, I have season tickets to the MLS team here in Austin, Texas, and dude, I paid $12 for a Michelob Ultra. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and again, he's not selling beer for $2 here, but like, if I could get food for $5, maybe it would be a little bit, you know, it just wouldn't hurt the wallet as much.
Well, that's the other thing too. Like, if you're spending, you know, whatever, $7 for hot dog, chips, pretzels,
yeah,
you're probably more inclined to spend that $12 on the beer still.
Absolutely. 100%. All right, Adam, anything else for you before we shut it down on episode 32 of the FTN Fast Break?
Let's go to a Suns game, man.
Yeah, I second that. All right, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in, sticking with us here in episode 32 of the FTN Fast Break. I'm back with Mike Randall on Monday for another episode of the Fast Break Podcast. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. We will do the same, and we'll see you back here on Monday. Till then, he's Adam, and I'm Zach. Goodbye. We'll be right back.